Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
Hi, I'm Pat Iyer, and this is Legal Nurse Podcast. Today, I have the privilege of bringing to you Debbie Worrell, who is a legal nurse consultant with extensive experience in geriatrics, home care, hospice, acute rehab, inpatient. She has a particular focus and interest in working on personal injury cases and med-mal attorneys, and has been working since 2005 in this field. Today, we're going to talk about one of the most important things that plaintiff attorneys are interested in, which is, how is this going to work out for making sure that we've got income coming into this client that will help pay for the cost of future care? And Debbie has extensive experience working in the area of cost projections. Debbie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Pat. Thanks for inviting me.
I just threw out a term, cost projection. Tell our listener who's listening to this on the audio channels that we have through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other locations, or our video channel, which is Legal Nurse Business on YouTube.com. Tell our viewer or listener about the cost projection term. What does that mean?
Well, another term for that is future cost of care. So a patient has dealt with a bad injury, whether it's in a car accident, whether it's a work-related incident, whatever the case may be, and the doctor opines that, okay, I've seen this patient, other providers have also seen this patient, and he or she has come along very well over the time that we have treated him or her, but we're noticing they have reached a plateau. And eventually, this particular doctor feels that the patient will, in the future, need more surgery to overcome the entire issue. So my role in that, then, is to figure out, what is that cost going to be? How much money would I recommend as a nurse to put aside for this patient's future needs? And the amount that I recommend is quite complex. It deals with a lot of different parts of the puzzle or parts of the wheel, whatever way you want to look at it, to come up with those high dollar amounts that we see people floating about on TV ads saying, this firm had awarded me this amount of money. And lay people look at that going like, wow, is that real? Yeah, it is real. So that's what a cost projection is. It's projecting what the cost will be for a particular service in the future.
And how is that different from a life care plan?
Well, it's part of a life care plan. Actually, I'm not a life care planner yet, but I do cost projections, which is part of that process. And a life care planner looks at all the different needs that the person's going to need for many, many, many years. And they get involved with economists and all that other kind of thing to figure out the actual dollar amount. I look at what is concrete, the dollar amount that I recommend is what is in the record at this point in time. I look at what the medications that the person was on. Well, first of all, I review the records and I figure out, okay, so what did this person really endure during this time after the injury, wherever the case may be? How long was he in the hospital? What did he have done? What kind of labs were done? Because that kind of gives me an idea of what the doctor's going to order in the future. Then I look at what medications was this person on? What did the doctor prescribe? How long was he or she on that medication? In the future, the doctors will order medication. It may not be the same one in the future, but I use the one that the person was taking at the time of his injury, during the hospitalization, and after to figure out the cost of medications. If he or she were on several medications, well, I include that as long as it's related to the injury. If it's something like omeprazole and it's got nothing to do with the injury, well, I'm not going to include that. If it's something like a sleep aid and it's not related to the injury, I'm not going to include that. But if it is related, I include it. I look at what kind of diagnostics were done, and I include that on and on and on and on.
And I've identified plaintiff attorneys being interested in this service. Is that the only group of individuals who would request a cost projection?
From my experience, it's been mostly the PI attorneys who deal with medical malpractice, who deal with multiple vehicle accidents, truck accidents, those kinds of things, motorcycle accidents, work injuries. I haven't had any medical malpractice attorneys ask me for a cost projection yet, but they have asked me, have I done them? So there's a possibility that there might be some interest there.
And if this is a service that appeals to a person listening to this podcast, what qualifications does that legal nurse consultant need in order to provide this service?
Well, I've been asked that question before. And in fact, at one situation, the opposing attorney wanted to disqualify me because he felt that everything that I had written in the cost projection was practicing medicine without a license, because he thought that I was ordering the therapy and the medicine and the diagnostics and all and the surgery. I'm not. What I do is I look at the doctor's opinion letter that is sent to the attorney. Again, I look at all the medical records. I have had extensive experience working with the insurance agencies, not the agencies, but the arenas, both in the private sector as well as in the public sector. And while I was in the public sector, I not only was case managing these cases, but then I would see the patients when they were in the hospital following their injury. I would then sometimes I'd have to accompany them to the doctor's visit. Often I would have to follow them at home because these were not to sound negative, because it's not negative at all. This could happen to anybody that's injured. The clientele that I worked with in the public sector were Medicaid patients. So a lot of times these patients were low income and had a lot of medical issues to begin with, and then they have this tragedy of a car accident, and or they're working very low income jobs, and they had the bad tragedies happening to them. They've been doctoring for a long time, and they're still not to the point of full recovery, but they're back to work, but they're still on limited duty, whatever the case may be. So, I took the information from what I learned at the hospital, dealing with their providers, dealing with the case managers and all that, and the discharge planners. And then when I met them in their homes and did follow-up home visits, I realized that the scenario in the home and what they were portraying in the hospital and to the doctor didn't always meld. People are embarrassed sometimes to say, "Doc, my house isn't like that. I don't have the support in my home. I don't have the support of family or friends to get me the supplies that I need and the equipment that I need. I don't know why I'm supposed to be following up with therapy, all that kind of thing. And I encourage them and I talk through all those issues with the patient and then tell the doctor, you know what? Can we approach it a different way together? Maybe we can get the patient to understand a little bit more using simpler terms, because sometimes, you know, we all know as nurses, doctors and providers tend to speak way up here, and the person's understanding is way down here. So can we get it a little bit to meld so that they can understand it better? And it's worked. Often it's worked very well for these patients, and I was able to get them to understand why they needed to take these medications, what these medications really need to do, on and on and on. Why they needed to use a walker for safety in their home when they have all these safety issues, why they needed to have somebody drive them rather than drive themselves to a doctor's visits because of the side effects of the drugs would cause dizziness and safety issues. So some of the qualifications that a nurse needs to have in order to do a cost projection, we have to know the continuity of care. So if the patient is in the hospital, they had surgery, now they're out, and they're looking at future surgery, you need to look at what's the usual steps that they go through following discharge from hospital. Are they going to go to inpatient rehab? Is there a reason for them to be in inpatient rehab? Do they need to see a doctor every single day? Are they going to go to subacute rehab? Is there a possibility that they'll go to home and have therapy there? Do they need therapy? Is it in the home? Is it outpatient? Is it, what kind of therapy is it? What kind of therapies did they have before? Look at that. And then what meds? Well, no classification of drugs, but and not necessarily the drugs that they'll be on in the future, but what were they on before? And then how long were they on it before? Those kinds of things. And then we need to look at what labs were ordered in the past, what labs will be ordered in the future. It's usually the same thing. Again, it's just a projection. You're not saying this is what the doctor is going to order. This is what you're projecting will be ordered based on the history. And then you look at do they need any DME? Do they need any equipment? What kind of equipment will keep them safe in the home? What kind of outside resources do they need to stay viable and active in the community while they're recovering? So those kinds of things, as a nurse, we know all that stuff, and we just have to put it into practice when doing cost projections.
Well, if we're thinking about the types of cases that benefit from this service, what are some examples of the kinds of patients, in this case, plaintiffs, who would be in need of a cost projection as part of the litigation involving their case?
Well, the ones that I've done a lot on were joint replacements, knee replacements, hip replacements. I had one recently where the person was 18 years old and he had his first hip replacement only because he was one of the lucky kids who had a hip that dislocated as a child and gave him a lot of grief. And the doctor opined that he would need a number of hip revisions over his lifetime. So my job was to figure out what are those revisions going to cost each. So each one had to be done separately. First one, second one, third one. And I had to look at what the complications may be in the future. That one was a very high dollar case. Others were, I had a patient who had a knee replacement 12 years ago, I think it was. He was home for 2 weeks, fell, getting out of his recliner. The therapist was in his home. He dislocated his new prosthesis, ended up going to the hospital and having a revision done. And during that whole first year, he had numerous revisions and the antibiotic beads and all that put in. He ended up being home in that first year, his first 2 weeks. After that, he was home for a while. He continued to have recurrent dislocations of the prosthesis, all due to infections in his knee. He recently died, from what I understand, from an infection in his knee. And the doctor told him just prior to that, his wife was telling me that he was looking at having an amputation. I had a person with another shoulder replacement that had to have it revised. All of those are really catastrophic for these people. And some are younger, some are older. When you consider that a prosthesis only lasts 20 years, you got to look at what's needed during that time. And again, it's not a life care plan. It's a cost projection. It's just a little piece of that pie. I've had car accident victims. I have had other truck accident victims. All that needed cost projections.
We're talking personal injury cases.
Yes.
Medical malpractice cases, potentially workers' compensation cases where there's some
Correct.
Injury. All right. Well, that helps to identify a little bit more concretely the types of cases. Somebody approaches you and asks for a cost projection. Does the attorney know what records to send to you, or does the attorney rely on you to say, I need this, this, and this?
Before we continue with the show, I'd like to share this special announcement with you.
If you wrote about the XYZ Corporation, the first thing you would need to do would be to change the name, the location, and what the company sold. These people are your customers. You owe them the right not to have their private business published, and it's so bad for future business. When it comes to telling stories about your personal life, be very careful when using stories about your spouse, your children, or your closest friends. They won't thank you if you do so without getting permission. Always consider the possibility that you're giving up too much information. People have different levels of candor and openness. Beyond the standard range lie two extremes. Some people don't want or to reveal anything personal about themselves. They might, for example, not want to reveal frustration with a coaching session. Perhaps they don't want to appear lacking in confidence, or because it's nobody's business. Impersonal writing, though, creates a speech, article, or book that's like a business card in shades of gray, even if it's loaded with stories. Potential customers want to have an initial sense of whom they might be hiring. The reclusive author gives no clues. At the other extreme are authors who lack filters. In writing a book about negotiation techniques, they might include personal family details and may tell stories that have nothing to do with the theme of the book. They muddy the waters and they divert attention away from their expertise. Find a happy medium. You might need to expand your comfort zone a little. You might need to develop filters. Do what will present yourself as an engaging, friendly, thoughtful individual who works well with people and knows what he or she is talking about. I'm Pat Iyer, the author of Powerful Storytelling in Business, How to Captivate Your Clients. My book has many more recommendations for storytelling. Give your writing an upgrade by getting it at patiyer.com/books.
Now let's return to the show.
I often tell them, they usually ask me, what do you need? And I tell them I need the history and physical from the time of the injury. I need the ER notes because I need to know what happened. I need to know their hospitalizations since that injury, and which includes the nurse's notes, of course, and the therapy notes. Because if I don't ask for the nurse's notes and the therapy notes, I usually don't get them. I have to ask for it. The billing definitely helps. This phone's going crazy today. So I ask for all those, and of course I ask for the opinion letter from the doctor. That's typically what I ask for. If I need more, then I ask for it when it comes up.
And suppose you know that this person's going to need a hip replacement done 20 years from now, and it's projected to take place at Milwaukee General Hospital, for example. How do you get the costs associated with that procedure?
It can be a little tricky. In the beginning, I used to call the billing office and say, I am calling on behalf of a friend of mine who is having surgery on a knee. And he asked me to help him figure out the amount of money that he needs to put aside. I don't get the information from the billing office. They told me several times that, you need to be the patient. I said, well, I'm not the patient, but I'm calling on behalf of the patient. Well, give us the patient's name and the doctor's name. We'll get in touch with the doctor's office. And he doesn't know when he's having the surgery. We just know that he's planning this in the future. So I don't go that route anymore. Nowadays, what I do is I look at the billing to find out what does that surgery cost at it's freighted. Milwaukee County is no longer open. It's freighted. I look at that to see what it costs for that particular procedure, and I take it from there. There's also websites out there that are available. In Wisconsin, we have this wonderful website from that lists all the different hospitals in the state according to county, and it will list the things like inpatient stays, outpatient stays, that kind of thing, doctor's visits, labs, but it's not the particular one that you may be looking for. But it may be in that same general area. They will list something like a hip replacement or a knee replacement, but they won't list the next one that needs to be done. So you have to take what's there and work with that.
And do you
There's
have
other websites out there too that list things throughout the country, but you have to go hunting for them.
is there a sense of how long this takes? Is this something that on average takes 10 hours, 20 hours, 5 hours? Can you give us a general range of time frame?
It depends on the number of calls that I have to make. Most of the information I can get online from these different websites that are available. But when I need information from therapists, yes, I look at the records to see what was done originally and how long they were in therapy. But I also call therapy places, whether they're freestanding, mostly freestanding, and I look at what is the patient's address? And I look for a place that's within 20 to 25 miles from the patient's residence because I want to make it within a reasonable area where they can go and get their therapy. Some patients, as we know, live in the city, so there's a therapy place on every third corner or whatever, to be facetious. And others live in the rural areas where it's quite a distance away. So I look at what's relatively close for their patient to reach so they can get their therapy and come home in a reasonable amount of time. I talked to the therapist there to find out, can you give me a ballpark figure of how long this person would come to you for a future surgery related to this joint? And what kind of things is done for that therapy session or therapy course to help the person recover? And the person is in this age group. I tell them, I don't give them the actual age. I don't tell them where the person actually lives, but I don't tell them if it's really a man or really a woman. I might be dealing with a man and tell them that I have this woman that needs to come in because of HIPAA. I don't give them the actual age, but I'll tell them he's a young adult, a middle-aged adult, or an older adult in the 70s. if they're in the 70s, or in the 80s if they're even higher than that. So does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. It does. You're talking about today's dollars and looking at medical records that show current dollars. What happens with inflation and other factors that are going to influence the actual cost of the care 20 years from now? How does that calculation take place, or does it?
That calculation could take place, but it wouldn't be me doing it. That the attorney would have to get an economist to look at, because they can do all that projection dealing with inflation and cost of living and all that kind of thing. I take what is concrete. I only take the numbers that are available through the records and what's available on the websites. I can't project anything in the future because I'm not trained in that respect.
And I have just a couple more questions. One is, what type of format do you use to provide this information to the attorney?
I use a table format, and I list it right at the beginning of my report. My report is a little bit different, but my table format then will list hospital costs, surgeon's cost, anesthesiology, all the different pieces of the puzzle, the meds, the labs. When the labs are done are important too. Are they done in the hospital? Are they done after? How often are they done? How many times does a person need to be stuck, especially if they're on Coumadin for INRs? I list the, even if the person is going to inpatient rehab and then going home, I still list, if I know that the person went to inpatient rehab first, I'll list it in my cost projection. If I know that they went to subacute and not inpatient, I'll list that. If they then go to home care because they did in the past, I'll list that. And then if they have outpatient therapy in the home, I list that. It's all separate. And then any kind of DME that's in there, anything that I addressed in my cost projection is listed on a separate line in the cost projection. And then at the very bottom, in bold numbers, is the total. And I have to say, I'm very, very proud of this, and kind of humbles me at the same point. I have done so many cost projections for a lot of different attorneys over the years, and every one of them, with the exception of one, told me that they have taken those numbers to mediation prior to going to trial, because in Wisconsin, they take it to mediation first. And they have gotten what I had projected, or even a little more, for the client before they went to trial. The person that didn't get that was because he wanted a format all in narrative. And when you take something to mediation, you got to have the numbers right there so that they can be seen. You don't want to go digging through all the narrative to find all that information. So it works out pretty good in a table form.
Yeah. I think there's a lesson there to be learned. Use the format that will provide the information quickly, make it easily located. Debbie, I know there are going to be people who are going to want to speak with you. What would be the best way for them to reach you and find out more about your services?
Well, they can always email me at Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, at worldlegalnurse.com. And that is my last name, is WUERLLEGALNURSE.com. I know it's long, I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. Or they can call me on my phone, which is 414-305-6270, anytime before 10 o'clock at night Central Time. My phone turns off at 10 o'clock.
That's a great plan. Well, thank you, Debbie. I appreciate the information that you shared. I know it's going to be helpful to our viewer or our listener. And thank you for being a guest on the show.
Thanks, Pat. I enjoyed it.
And for you who's watching this show, be sure to give a like or a thumbs up or a thumbs down on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel so that you will not miss any episodes. We release episodes every week, and this is your opportunity to learn more about Legal Nurse Consulting, connect with people, expand your thoughts, realize that what you have to offer to attorneys is valuable, and in the case of cost projections, can make a big difference in the plaintiff's life to make sure there's going to be money available for the cost of future care. Come back next week for a new show, new guest. I'm Pat Iyer. We've been talking with Debbie Worrell about cost projections. Thanks so much. Coming up next, you're going to hear from Ruth Pierce, who is a person who works as a reviewer, a field reviewer, for a national accreditation company and has extensive experience in critical care and emergency type clinical settings. Our topic is congestive heart failure. We know that this is one that can lead to readmissions and a great deal of effort and expense within the healthcare system if it's not properly managed. Ruth, what were some of the key topics that we covered related to congestive heart failure?
Yes, Pat. Some of the things that we discussed were, what are clinical practice guidelines? How do you know when they come out? What do they include? How are they important to the clinician, bedside clinician, as well as the providers? How do you find out about them? How do you stay up to date if when guidelines come out? How are they important to local clinicians and also globally? And then we also talked about how are clinical practice guidelines developed? Who is involved in that development? What is the collaboration? What is the timeline for new guidelines? When can you expect new ones coming out? And then probably lastly is the implication. So what is the implication for both clinicians, practitioners who do not follow guidelines in management of care? And then what's the implication for the legal nurse consultant and their work and how they can review that?
All that in 30 minutes. Can you believe it? Be sure to listen to Ruth Pierce's podcast on the topic of clinical practice guidelines for congestive heart failure. You'll learn a lot, whether or not you've got a case involving congestive heart failure or not. The process that she describes in this podcast is one that you can use in researching the current clinical practice guidelines in effect at the time of the care, and to get a bigger understanding of how these things come about, and also whether all hospitals and providers are expected to follow this, or whether you get an excuse if you're in a smaller rural hospital. Ruth answers that question. You need to come to the podcast to find out the answer. Ruth Pierce and clinical practice guidelines coming up next on Legal Nurse Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.